Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
That's right. We are, in fact, tonight's entertainment. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of AMP Radio. This one is This Week in MMA. We do it every Sunday, not in prime time. today I was supposed to be joined by Lionheart Smith, at Lionheart Smith, Anthony Smith. I don't believe he's going to be joining us today. And also we were supposed to be joined by Vegas Ford, but Vegas Ford had a family issue that came up at the last minute, so we wish him well as well. But on a positive note, I am still going to be joined by my co-host, with me usually every Sunday. That's correct, indeed. we may get Lerone on the show as well. We just threw that out to him real quickly, and I'm not sure if that's going to come to fruition. And I am just looking for your intro music. Of course, I cannot find it. Goodness gracious, this is fun, isn't it? Everybody dropping out.
Yeah,
and I can't find anything.
You can't find anything. It's lonely in here.
Let's bring you in. Ryan Moody at Shutdown Safety. Here we go. All right.
Well, good morning. I am here. I'm awake. And we had a really good night of fights. I mean, that's the best part about this. We got a great card to talk about. Whether it's just you and me or not, somebody joins in, man. You know, I wish the UFC would go to Brazil more frequently because it really is an experience when fighters go to Brazil. Obviously, you know, the way BJJ was, you know, brought up there, it's really much larger there as a culture than it ever is here. And when you see events like that, when you see that, you know, that stadium they have, the Olympic Training Center, just packed, people out the door the whole night, it really is quite a spectacle. And obviously, like I said, the way they rally for their fighters, the way they treat opposing fighters, but at the end always respect everyone, it is quite an amazing sight if you've never seen it.
Yeah, and of course we were referring to the UFC Vitor Belfort versus Kelvin Gastelum. That came to us from Fortaleza, Brazil. And as you mentioned, Ryan, from this Olympic training site that apparently was just getting finished. I heard on the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan that they were just actually installing the air conditioning a couple of days before the event was supposed to be on. And then, of course, we hear on the broadcast itself that it was actually quite warm in the building, even though they had some air conditioning. So tough night for the commentators, that's for sure.
Well, someone is having a very different phone call this morning than you and me, because someone wants to know why the air conditioning didn't work when the UFC showed up. So they're not having as quite of a joyous conversation. You had one job, which was to get the air conditioning to work in this massive building full of 15,000 people, and you couldn't do it.
Yeah, dropped the ball on that one. But apparently that's Brazil for you. All right.
No comment. Brazil is full of killers. I applaud everything they do. I apologize. Their air conditioning union is bad.
So let's get into it. Let's start at the bottom of the main card if we can. We'll start with Alex the Cowboy Oliveira versus Tim the Dirty Bird Means. And, of course, this is the second time these two have met. The first time they met ended in what the Nevada State Athletic Commission is calling a no contest. This one, my friend, worked out a little bit differently. Cowboy, of course, getting the win in an impressive fashion. I thought this was I had picked Tim Means in this one. I thought for sure that with the way the fight was going the last time, you know, Tim Means kind of winning what we had saw at to that point. I thought, you know, Tim Means was going to be able to get it done again, but not the case.
Yeah, no, I felt the exact same way. I thought this would kind of be a replay of the last fight. And for a while, it looked like it was going to be. I mean, Tim came out really strong, really aggressive, pushed the pace. To me, Alex is a bit long in the tooth. He struggled again against some big-name competition. You go back and take a look at what happened against Donald Cerrone, and I didn't see him being able to keep the pace up. From what we were told in the broadcast, although we didn't see it, he came out differently, which to me is always a significant change in a fighter's mindset when you learn that they're not coming out the same way you traditionally see them. And obviously, whatever he did worked, whether it was the home turf, whether it was, you know, the more focused, the more aggressive, you know, he came out and he worked on Tim. He was beating Tim up and he got him into a point where he could get him in a choke and there was no coming back. I mean, you know, Tim tapped. I think Alex kind of tried to rub it in a little bit after the fight, and I didn't know how that was going to go with Tim because obviously, you know, I wouldn't say there's some bad blood between these two, but certainly they respect each other because that was, you know, made well aware to us after the fight. But I don't know if they're each other's favorite person, so to speak. So I didn't know how Tim was going to react to some of those shenanigans that Alex usually does. But he took it well. They hugged it out. And, you know, honestly, I don't think that we wouldn't see this fight again in the future. I mean, traditionally, it goes to a rubber match when it's 1-1. However, these aren't the two biggest names in the welterweight division. I don't think a lot of people put a lot of stock into this card. The only reason I think it was probably on the main card is because of the history they had, which kind of shows you where their stock has went, to quote GSP. But, you know, to me, I was impressed with it, but I don't think this is going to be something where, you know, Oliveira is going to catch fire going forward. I mean, he really is at the end of his rope either way, whether he was going to beat Tim Means or not.
Yeah, I was very, very surprised at how fast Tim Means tapped out to that choke. I mean, and as you had mentioned, I think Alex really felt very vindicated by the win, you know, because of how the last one ended. And you know, he did celebrate a bit. And but as you said, that's going to happen after you have a big win like this. And what did you think about the tap? Did you think that was real quick, like I did?
You know, listen, I've never done it, but I know that, especially with rear naked chokes, it doesn't have to take long. I mean, honestly, if we want to get down to the brass tacks, I mean, this is a choke that's meant to kill someone. It's meant to crush your windpipe. And I think once you hit a point of no return, that a smart enough fighter will realize there's no coming out of it. I mean, I think for a long time, if you remember backstage, Northcutt did a quick tap against Brian Barberina, and people kind of rode him on it, but at the end of the day, mentally, you know, if you're able to come back out of something, and I just imagine Tim Means probably was like, listen, I ain't coming back from this. There's no way I can counter it. I can't get back any position. What's the point in standing here and suffering? You know, what am I going to do? Just wait till I pass out? I've never judged a fighter for a quick tap.
Yeah, I'm not judging him. I just thought, you know, I was surprised see him tap so quickly, and like you said, that choke must have been in tight because it was over real quick. Anyways, I thought it was an impressive end to that fight. But let's move on to the next fight up on the card, which I did not find as impressive. the Pitbull Correa versus Marion the Brazilian Bruiser. Yes, Renault. Okay, so this one ended up in a draw, a majority draw, I believe. And I just didn't find this fight. First of all, I thought Renault won. I thought she did enough to get the win. Second of all, it didn't really impress me. I mean, I'm not really impressed by anything that Betch usually does. I think she's maybe a little bit one-dimensional. She looked a little bit better in this fight, but you know what really disturbed me, though, was the dance moves. I'm going to be honest. Like, let's get down to it, Moody. That's really what disturbed me.
Listen. They're both not the most attractive women to begin with. I've never liked Betch. I've never liked her. She, you know what I don't like about her most? She has the most unorthodox fighting stance I've ever seen any fighter have. She fights like a pigeon walks. She puts her leg out the way a pigeon takes his first step. And it's very strange, and it's annoying to watch. She's always talked better than she's fought, and that's okay for some fighters, but you have to put together some type of winning streak to be able to talk like that. As far as this fight, this is one that worried me. You know, I know that Marianne is from Brazil, but she fights out of the U.S. The crowd seemed pretty hostile toward her. And I figured, geez, the judges might side with Betch more. And clearly, you know, Marianne won the first two rounds. I don't know anyone that could go back and say that she didn't. She clearly gave up the third. So at that point, I felt, you know, if anything, you would have it 2-1. But an impartial judge is going to have this as a draw now, because they're going to 10-8 the third round if they won. And apparently, you know, at least one judge did that. So I thought it was more interesting that as the decisions got read, and it was, you know, it's a quick decision just to say two judges see it 28-28 at the draw. They almost didn't understand what was being said. And we just went through this, you know, what, 5-6 months ago with Thompson and Wonderboy. And I don't know where the ref went during this. I guess he just walked away. So they weren't really there to have both their hands raised. So it was a very awkward moment in the middle of the ring. And again, I mean, you know, this is a fight, I think if you go back, a lot of people can argue which way it went. But, you know, we talked about this initially when the rules started. And they did adopt the new scoring system rules, although they didn't adopt the grounded opponent rules and the other rules with the open figures. We were going to start to see more draws. Okay, and here we are, 2 to 3 months, 4 months in, and we're seeing more draws. Exactly what we thought would happen. No one should be surprised. Yes, it's a little bit disappointing and anticlimactic, but it is going to start to happen. When you have a fighter clearly win two rounds, but dominate one of the three, you are going to probably start seeing these go to draws. And it's just kind of something we're going to have to get used to. Maybe in a few years they'll revisit it if it becomes a larger problem. I don't think that it will. But at the end of the day, you also have to look at what's going on in these fighters. I mean, you have to put out performance all three rounds. And if you don't, you run the risk of not just losing, but drawing a fight. So I put this completely on the hands of Renaud. She knew she had 2-1. She knew she had won, you know, two of the three. All she had to do is not just get beat up the final round, and she would have been okay. I mean, go for some takedowns. Try to get something that's going to side you with the judges. And she didn't do any of that. And that's what's going to happen. Now, how this impacts the bigger part of this to me is how this is going to impact the rankings. Because I don't think it's fair that either one of them gain or fall due to withdrawal.
Yeah.
Unless you're fighting somebody way outside of your stock, you know, like the Vulcan guy that beat OSP. If that had went to a draw, then I could see him, you know, going up and OSP falling. But in this fight, you know, you really can't take much out of it. I mean, they kind of just have to sit where they were. Now they've went through 6 months camp or 4 months camp. They've had a fight on TV, and for what? Nothing, really, to be where they were. Yeah. And that's probably what the most disappointing thing, you know, outcome of this is. You know, these athletes don't have forever to fight. And they're putting a lot of time, money, and energy into these camps. And to be finished with a fight and have nothing to show for it other than a draw is really, to me, something that a lot of fans don't like to see, probably nor the fighters. It probably also killed boxing to a degree. So I don't think we're going to go down that road, but I think we need to get used to these draws.
Yeah, like you had mentioned, it was a weird scene at the end when they were calling out the judges' scorecards, and both of them, like you said, just looking at each other going, what just happened? Very strange.
Right. Who lost?
Again,
yeah, is what they looked like.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but again, unlike the Wonderboy fight that ended in a draw a couple of months back against Woodley, I don't think we need to see this one again. I honestly was mainly the one fight on the main card that I was very unimpressed with, and ending in a draw. I don't need to see these two ladies come back together again at any time in the future. I think they can just both move on. And as you said, very disappointing result because, yeah, they put a lot of time and effort into these camps and, you know, just to come down and have to travel. I mean, not so much for Betch, I guess. I'm not too sure if she's training in Brazil. I think she is. But for Renaud,
yeah, I think
she's
training with the Pitbull brothers.
Come all the way down. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
I think she's training with the Pitbull brothers, so I think she would stay there.
And hence the nickname also. I don't know how many pit bulls there are in Brazil, but it seems to be quite a few.
Yes.
Okay.
They tend to like that nickname.
Moving, Definitely, definitely. We are moving through these fights kind of fast, so we may have to speak about a couple of the fight pass or the prelim fights if we burn through them, if you're okay with that.
I'm fine, yeah, I watched them all.
Yeah, okay, so did I. So let's move on. As you say, Formiga versus Ray Borg, the Taz Mexican Devil, apparently. Nice one. Now listen, this one was a hard-fought win for Ray. I mean, a good fight. I mean, very, very scrappy. I mean, when these guys started going, they were going at a mile a minute, man. They were just moving around. And I don't know why people don't like this weight division. To me, if you're an MMA fan, you're an MMA fan, no matter what it is, women's, men's, whatever weight class, you know, you're a fan. And I just don't understand why people don't like this division. I thought this was a great fight as well. Very, very hard-fought fight for Ray Borg.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I believe Ray Borg came in the underdog on this too. Don't quote me on that. Unless I'm right, then certainly quote me. I think he came in under. And, like you said, as an MMA fan, I don't know how you can't like these fights. I mean, this whole weight class, you know, is fair. It's exciting fights. There's not really a lot of mismatches, but they traditionally have a problem selling these cards and selling the whole division as it is. And I think Ray Borg is a great example of a fighter that could probably do a lot better if he went out of the division. He's had some issues making weight. But if you look at the flyweights in general, you know, obviously you go to the top, you look at Demetrius Johnson, they did everything they could to push Demetrius. I don't think they can even put Demetrius on a pay-per-view card at this point. I mean, they pushed him right now to UFC Kansas City as the main event. Because so many people are unenamored with the flyweight division. I don't want to turn this into an argument as to why, but I think that the fights generally are just small, obviously smaller guys, less, you know, knockout potential. But as you mentioned, generally lead to high-paced, better cardio fighters that go a whole round. And I mean, this is a prime example. I mean, these two went after each other the whole fight. I thought it was a very close fight. So did the judges, obviously. And in the win, you know, Ray Borg was very, very respectful about it. I think he felt like he did better than he had done based on the way he spoke. But I thought he did kind of just enough to win, weathered the storm. But, I mean, this was a very high-paced fight, a very energetic fight. And honestly, after the, I don't want to say that, you know, the Correa-Renault fight was a little bit boring, but this was a nice pick-me-up going into the rest of the card. Because at that point, I was like, all right, well, if these fights are going to suck, then I'm, you know, going to not like watching this. But they did. They turned on a very good performance, and I was glad to see Ray get the win. I think he's an underrated fighter. He's put together a pretty good career for himself if you look at his record. And obviously, I think he feels like he deserved a bit more high-quality name and opponents going forward.
Yeah, and as you had said, he was the underdog at a -125 coming into this fight. Thank you, UFC, for that. I'm on the UFC site here, and they've just added a tab that has all of the odds. So very interesting and for us to use as a tool in these fights. I'd like to see Ray Borg move up, you know, get his chance. I mean, fighting the number three guy obviously is going to move you up. But I mean, he has stumbled. If I'm correct, two fights ago, he had to get lost against Justin Scoggins. That kind of put him back a bit. Then that nice win over Smolka, and then of course this win. So yeah, I mean, Borg is another contender. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him against Demetrius, because hey, we need fighters to fight Demetrius because he's beat them all.
Well, I think Reyes that they put against him for Kansas City is like ranked seventh. He's pretty far back. But the fact of the matter is Johnson's beat everyone else backwards. So you have to start pulling deeper in the rankings to find an opponent he hasn't faced.
Well, I'd like to see Borg get that opportunity next. What's that?
They just did a whole TV show. Okay, trying to find a person to beat this guy, and it still didn't work because the guy they came up with had already lost to him to begin with. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. It's like the anti-McGregor problem they have. You know, McGregor won't come back and defend any belts, but Demetrius just keeps defending the belt continually. They might have to strip the belt from him, make him wear a 20-pound weight belt, and go in and fight bigger people to give him a chance to lose, because apparently that's the only way it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, he's amazing. And again, like I said at the top when we started talking about this fight, this division is incredible. You never see a dull or a boring fight in this weight division. So I think, yeah, onward and upward for this division, in my opinion. Okay, as I said, we are moving through these fights rather quickly with it just being the two of us. So let's move up. Edson Barbosa versus Benny Dariush. Freaking awesome fight here, and what a finish. Barbosa just adding to his highlight reel of finishes. Just a wonderfully, perfectly timed flying knee. I was out of my seat. I couldn't believe it. It was super, super high level striking, and I thought, hey, beautiful. And you know what? I almost thought that Benil took an extra hit there from the ref as he jumped in, because, wow, he came flying in and just almost body slammed Benil. What did you think?
You know, the first thing that they took me back with this fight was in the beginning when they were showing Barbosa's highlight reel, and he has quite an extensive one, that they elected to continue to show that Terry Edom guy that got knocked out on that kick when he just tried to commit suicide. And I was like, you know, maybe that's, I mean, don't get me wrong, I know it was the knockout of the year whenever it happened and all that, but I was thinking, like, man, maybe you shouldn't show that. Like, maybe that's not the one that you lead with. But, you know, that was just my line of thinking, a little bit too soon. But, you know, listen, this is what Barbosa does. I mean, he comes out, he puts on these impressive performances, and whether it's luck or not, he finds a way to just destroy someone's life in an octagon. And I don't know when these flying knees started to get, I don't know, trained, because it seems like for the longest time, we never really saw flying knees. But now, you know, other than like the standing like Superman knee almost, if you will. But now we've got this whole different scenario that comes into play. We saw it with Chris Weidman. We saw it with Cyborg Santos, where someone almost comes in for a shoot, and magically, the moment they do, they get clipped with a knee. And there's just no way. Like, your body weight is going down toward the knee is coming up up at you very quickly, and you're going to go to sleep. And it happened again, and every time it happens, it seems like the most gruesome thing that you can see, and it seems like the most freak fluke thing you'll ever have happen. But, you know, listen, they were having at this, you know, as we said, you know, running back fight. If there was one fight that I would like to see get ran back, it would be this one. Because if it wasn't for that kind of fluke thing, I think Dariush was winning this fight. And he just happened to shoot at the wrong time, got smacked in the head by a kneecap, and went to sleep. The referee, you know, honestly, I really thought if the internet, this is one of those situations where Twitter really let me down, because I thought there was going to be some memes where, like, the Incredible Hulk, you know, threw this ref. Like, where was he at? Like, because they never actually showed the whole thing. And generally, like, when a ref steps in, he steps in with his arm. This dude comes flying in back first. And I mean, like, what were you doing? Like, were you, like, getting, like, nachos or something at the concession stand, thinking you were going to be okay? Then you had to run back, and you tripped backwards. I mean, it's like if Wile E. Coyote was a ref, and you're like, how would he break up a fight? It would be what that dude did. It was literally like a flying back lunge. At this point, though, I was just glad that girl was out of there. You know, listen, not to be sexist, but that female ref that was in those first fights, she had no business being in that octagon. She was not versed in the rules. She stopped the fight in the middle. I mean, I guess we can get into this later, but she stops the fight in the middle of a submission. She doesn't return him to the position, which there was no way of getting out of. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I was just happy to see somebody that looked competent in the ring. But yeah, that flying through the air was absolutely hilarious. I wish he had a cape on, because if he had a cape on for that, it would have been like flapping behind him as he flew it. It would have looked so much more impressive. But I was like, yeah, what the hell is this guy doing? Flying backwards in. Yeah. But listen, that's what he elected to do. And in my opinion, you know, it's probably the most impressive ref action I've seen, other than when that dude lost his shoe in Bellator and had to put it back on.
Yeah, the flying knee, I mean, as you were saying, I mean, it didn't take a lot to get to where it needed to land. You know what I mean? It was very quick. Didn't have to travel far, so the power was just all, you know, really focused in that one place. I thought really impressive. I'm glad that Benny didn't get really, really hurt. Like, he didn't get his skull caved in or anything like that, because that's, you know, that was really gruesome to watch, and I'm glad we didn't see that here. And speaking of,
yeah, I don't think there was even any blood.
No, I don't think so.
There was no blood on that.
Landed. Yeah. It just a very effective strike, landed in the right place, and Benny went to sleep. And hey, learned he's going to fight in another day, and that's cool. But I mean, yeah, very impressive. And I had Barbosa going into this one, and he came out with the win. Even though Benny's friend of the show, I thought, you know, that Edson could get it done, and he did very impressively. It's not telling me here if they tell you if it was fight of the night or if they got a bonus, but I'm not seeing it here. But I think that Barbosa did get a win bonus for this one, so good on him. Okay, so let's move to the co-main event. This one, you know, was kind of lackluster to me when it was first announced. Like, why is this happening? You know, Mauricio Shogun Hua against Gian Vellante. And it kind of went exactly the way I thought it was going to go, with Hua taking the win. I mean, even though he's, you know, in the twilight of his career, even though he's only, what, 35, he's been in the sport forever. And I kind of feel bad taking him. You know, you never really know what you're going to get. So, but came through with an impressive win here. And, you know, always good to see a legend like this take another win and take another step forward in the division. But I don't know what's next for him, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, and it's funny that you saw it that way, because to me, I saw it going the total opposite way. I thought this was going to be the passing of the guard. I thought this was Shogun, you know, getting out, you know, maybe not on a knockout, but definitely with taking a loss, getting to maybe retire in front of his home crowd, and then that being the end of it. And unfortunately, I guess unfortunately might not be the right word for some of the sense, but I feel like that's what the UFC script, and I felt like that's what they were aiming to do here, and that's the way it should be. Now, you know, Shogun is a legend, okay, really. I actually looked at Shogun and Belfort in the same light when you talk about legendary fighters, and even though I'm not a Belfort fan, we'll talk about him in a minute, I just hold them in a different regard because of what they've accomplished. Personally, I thought that this was going to be a fight that was going to end in Shogun being knocked out. And I tell you what, it wasn't because Vellante didn't try. You know, he certainly did. These two went after just solid punches and strikes. You know, there was just high-level striking in this fight. And it turned into a scrap. And, you know, you would just think that a guy 10 years younger would be able to come out on top just through pure age conditioning. But, you know, we learned that, you know, listen, Shogun is just not human like other people are. I mean, he found a way to beyond weather a storm. I mean, he took probably some of the hardest hits he's taken in a very long time in rapid succession, came back and knocked him out. And, you know, like you said, it puts the UFC in a weird predicament because now, you know, you have these older guys that are doing better than they should. Dan Kelly, a prime example. What do you do with these people? You know, I hate to say this, but they made a big deal about, you know, Vitor Belfort coming out 20 years. You know, he's headlining the cards. You're looking at footage with this guy, and you realize it's like UFC 8. You know, or whatever it was. It's old footage, and you can tell by looking at it, it's old footage, and yet still here he is. You know, Shogun is kind of the same way. Now, maybe Dan Kelly isn't the same way, but I think it's going to be hard for the UFC to make a face, if you will, of these guys, to lead with these guys, even though this was a co-main event, when they're just getting that old. I think it's something that, as a purist, and you and me, I don't care. I'll watch two people fight no matter what. You know, I watched Ken Shamrock fight when he was damn near 50. But will a novice fan, will a casual fan care about the legacy of Shogun Rua versus whoever they're going to put him up against? Because I just don't see that being the case. But listen, man, he just will not go away quietly. He is a fighter, and that's what he will do. And, you know, listen, we're kind of getting to see that play out now when his career should be twilighting. It's hard to twilight, I think, in MMA. You know, it's not like any other sport where, you know, you can go out in baseball or football and you can have some bad games and it's okay, but then you can have that one, like, miraculous moment where you know, recapture your glory and everyone feels good about it. That doesn't happen in MMA. You know, the competition is too stiff and there's way too much at stake and you end up just getting losses piled on and you learn you have to retire because your body starts to break down. But, yeah, it puts them in a really unique situation how to handle this fight. Because if I had to bet, I betted wrong on this fight, so if I had to bet again, I would think that this is not the way the UFC exactly build this card to pan out in some ways.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that you say that Volante is 10 years younger than Shogun, but in actual fact, they're only 4 years apart. I mean, Volante is 31. And
oh, it's, 35. You know, 4 years, 10 years. It is what it is.
Yeah. But I thought it was, going into it, I guess, I'll explain to you why I thought Hua was going to take this one down, because Volante really hasn't shown me anything impressive. You know, he's win one, lose one, and I'm not even sure why he's at number, ranked number 12. I mean, just I have not seen a lot from him, and never really impressed by his performances, as GSP would love to say. And yeah, like you said, looking back while you were talking at some of the photos from the fight, yeah, man, just an absolute war. And if you're going to step into the octagon with a striker as high level as Hua is, you've got to expect that kind of a hard fought battle. And good on him. Like you said, sometimes we see Hua in the past little while we're kind of wondering about his chin. I mean, Dan Harrison connects on your chin, you're going down no matter what. But I could see people having concerns about his chin and his battles in the past coming into this fight. But I thought, as I mentioned, that he would be able to take it down because of my lack of in being impressed by Volante. And again, and not to say that he's not a great fighter. He is obviously putting on a great show last night. And in the co-main, it was, you know, again, building up to a crescendo, and then the main event came. And do you have anything more to say on this, or should we move on to the main event?
Well, I was going to say, when you question why he got ranked that high, I think the UFC, yeah, in a way, cares a little bit too much about what a fighter does. We've seen him take some fights on short notice. We saw him have some late replacements in fights, and he still came out and done well. And I think when the UFC feels that they give them those opportunities and they don't turn them back and they save a card, not that it should matter, but I think it endears them a little bit. So, I mean, I think, you know, he had, I'm trying to think of who, he took a short notice fight against somebody super early, knocked the guy out, and then turned back around, and I think Anthony Perot pulled out of a fight. I don't think Volante's pulled out of a whole lot of fights either. I know that he had the issue last year where they were gonna put him up against somebody. I don't know if it was Patrick Cummins or not, but somebody had to pull out, whether it was him or whatever the case was. But anyway, all that stuff I think adds up, and I think it's kind of like when you do the UFC a solid, they'll turn back around and do you a solid. And you know, not to say that's what happened here, but certainly it's something that weighs on my mind when I hear somebody say, well, I don't know how this guy could be rated this high or how this guy could get this fight. I mean, listen, sometimes those are just kind of the things that happen.
Right, right.
There are politics involved.
When you look back, of course, if you do the UFC of solid, you would expect them to do you one as well. But if you look back at the past five fights that he's had, I mean, the two wins that he's had in the past five, Anthony Perosh and some guy who TJ, who is your mama, you know, and then of course losses to the bricklayer Aleer Latifi and Tom Lawler in the past five. So again, not saying that he's not a talented fighter. I wonder why we use these rankings sometimes, because sometimes they don't make sense. Okay, so let's move on to the main event. Vitor Belfort, the Phenom, against number 10 ranked Kelvin Gastelum. Of course, second fight for Gastelum at 185. And we thought that Belfort was going to be a big test for him. But the way I remember the fight going down, I remember Vitor really giving Kelvin a little bit more respect. You know what I mean? We know that Kelvin has a very good boxing game. And of course, Vitor is not on and the non-on-it supplements anymore. So we have really seen the decline of Vitor. I thought fantastic win for Kelvin. Looked very, very impressive against a guy maybe not at the top of the weight class anymore. Your thoughts, Ryan?
Well, you know, my thoughts are very similar to what you said. I mean, when I look back at Vitor's record, I see knockout of the night Bisping, knockout of the night Rockhold, knockout of the night Henderson, lose to Weidman for the middleweight championship, performance of the night against Dan Henderson, and then all of a sudden, USADA rolls around. And then we've got a loss to Ronaldo Souza, we've got a loss to Mousasi, we've got this loss. I'm just saying, it looks a little bit sketchy. And for what it's worth, you can combine the ages that I was wrong before and the age you gave. You know, there are, you know, I think 14, 13 years between these two. So yeah. With that being said, you know, Vitor has done a lot for MMA. There's no way that you could write the history of MMA and not include, or even the UFC, if you will, and not include Vitor's name. And I wouldn't disrespect his legacy, but at the same time, I'm looking at something that's very questionable. I mean, I still have to wonder, like you said, how much had performance-enhancing drugs or whatever he was on, if he was on them at all, affected him? And if he was on them, if he wasn't on them, rather, what is to blame for this monumental collapse where he was beating, literally, some guys? I mean, listen, Bisping is still the champ. Rockhold is still in the top five. He's 5 years removed from beating these guys. And then now he can't even beat lower-tiered fighters in the division. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. As far as Gastelum, you know, he really was considered one of the better middleweights. I mean, he's an up-and-coming guy. He's played very well in the game of MMA, if you will. Yeah, he has that loss against Neil Magny, and then obviously joins the club of people that have been beat by Tyron Woodley. But he's done very well. I mean, he got, you know, Johnny Hendricks in that weird catch weight when Hendricks realized he couldn't be, you know, couldn't make weight anymore. He did a great job in that fight, won by decision. He just knocked out Tim Kennedy. And now he gets this, you know, and these are hostile territory fights, you know. You know, American fighters traditionally don't go into Brazil and get treated well. This was another example of it, in my opinion. It's a difficult place to fight. I've talked to Anthony Alada. You know, he fought in Brazil, and he talks about how difficult it is as far as just the way fans act towards you. But other than that, outside of it, and I think Ray Borg mentioned as well, beautiful country, everyone is super respective and loves mixed martial arts. But for the moment that you're walking to that cage, you know, they want you to know that you're about to go die. You know, and that's all there is to it. But this was an impressive fight for me for Kelvin. I mean, he came out, he pushed the pace against somebody that's historically known to have a good motor, and he basically just brought the fight to Vitor. You can say to me that it was Vitor respecting him. To me, I think Vitor wasn't prepared for Kelvin to come at him the way he did. And when it happened, he probably got taken back a little bit, and in trying to regroup, he got knocked out. This fight could have went either way. There was a lot of times where I thought Gastelum was a little bit wobbly. I mean, even though they went for less than a round, that round they were definitely hammering away at each other, and they were aiming for that wild knockout, which I thought was a little bit strange because these are two more conventional fighters, you know, to just get in a scrap like that. But, you know, I thought Kelvin did a really good job of controlling distance, maintaining his shots and accuracy. And ultimately, that's what it's going to take to put somebody away, and that's what he did.
Yeah, I think that his boxing game, and just to clarify, 14 years difference in the age between these two guys. So maybe
see,
that's
there you
one
go.
Of the reasons
I'm, numbers
why,
are I'm bad with numbers, man. There's way too many of them.
Crazy though. Yeah, I think Vitor said when he won the championship back in the day, Kelvin was 4. So there, it gives you a little bit of perspective on that one. And maybe that age difference is kind of why Kelvin looked, to me at least, he looked pretty impressive and did look like the faster individual in the cage. Now, this talk about Calvin going back to 170, I think, needs to stop until Calvin gets dusted by someone at the top end of this division, like, you know, your Romero's, Yoel Romero. Holy crap, what was up with that? I don't think he stands a chance against a guy like that, but I do like him at this weight division. I like to see guys, and we've talked about this before on the show, fight at a more healthy weight. You know, we've got Johnny Hendricks that you mentioned earlier on. Maybe we could see has had to move up as well. Maybe we can see Gastelum against him. And, of course, Gastelum calling out Anderson Silva, which I think is probably one of the best fights that he could have suggested in the future, not only because of name recognition, but, again, it's another 185er that perhaps he stands a better chance against.
No, I would agree. I think at some point something has to change here. I mean, the weight cutting is becoming a problem across the board for fighters' health. I mean, let's be honest. And we thought it would be different when they started doing the morning weigh-ins, and perhaps it has because we don't see those except in those weird, like, cell phone videos we get. And maybe that's changed things for the better. I don't know. But I do know that guys are coming into the ring to bring this back around. There's a middleweight card in the prelims where Paulo Henrique Costa fought Gareth McClellan. And this is a middleweight fight. When I saw Costa walk out, I said, geez, that is probably one of the biggest, most muscular middleweights I've ever seen. You know, what does that guy weigh going in the ring? And we have to either find some way to monitor what these people fight at versus what they walk at, or just make more weight divisions. And I know it doesn't need to become boxing, and I know a novice or casual would think, well, there's not much difference between 180 and 185. Yes, there is. Because, you know, we heard last week, you know, there was talks that Nurmagomedov was trying to drop 22 pounds in a day.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that I mean, I don't care how you do it. You know, whether you sauna it, whether you water load, whether you're drinking apple cider vinegar, there's no healthy way to do that. You know, the reports that came out when we saw the pictures of him, first of all, we saw the pictures of him. He literally, no joke, he looked like he was dying. They're reporting now that he may have had issues getting blood to his liver for a weight cut. And it damages fight. I mean, it's not fair. If he was 6 pounds over at that point, well, I hate to break it to you. If someone's 6 pounds over at that point, one, they're not going to get it back, but two, they're going in the cage, you know, 20 pounds over. And there was some interesting conversation in one of the, and I don't know which one it was, but one of the videos, it talked about, it might have even been, actually, you know what, I take that back. It was in the GSP press conference where he spoke about you have to train with someone that's heavier than you, you know, 10, 15 pounds heavier than you, because you have to expect that when you go in. And, you know, here's another middleweight. And he wasn't a middleweight before, he's stepping up. So he's expecting to fight someone that may be 190, 195, if not more, in the cage. And I just think, like, the weight classes, when they were defined initially, I don't think any of this stuff happened. And I think one day somebody realized, wait a second, if I can weigh 185 the day I need to weigh 185, but go into a fight at 200, I've got a massive advantage and there's probably no way I'll lose. And I don't know who that person was, but he was a genius. And I apologize if it was Ken Shamrock in advance, because that would be wrong. But and then everyone decided, oh, I have to start doing this. Unless you're 265 and a heavyweight, everyone started doing it. And it's gotten the sport now to a point where the weight cutting, to me, is almost as, if not more dangerous than the actual fight.
Oh, definitely. Definitely dropping the way these guys are dropping weight is definitely not healthy for them. But, I mean, let's just, you brought up Nurmi earlier on, and of course we know of Calvin's woes of trying to make weight. Look, these guys need to be smarter about how they're doing it. And I was having a conversation with James Lynch on Twitter, I think it was Friday night when the workout or the weigh-ins were happening, and he was saying, well, maybe just have them have the ability to weigh in all day. But then that defeats the purpose of having that morning weigh-in and giving the guys the opportunity to recover from the extreme weight cuts. And you had mentioned you didn't know where this weight cutting stuff came from. I mean, as soon as we saw wrestlers coming over and that kind of lifestyle transferring over into MMA, I mean, everybody started doing it, like you said. And again, I'm very, very against these weight cuts. And again, we're losing high profile fights. Like that Nurmi fight, had it gone off last week, would have been, that fight card would have been so much better. You know what I mean? It's so anticipated.
Well,
and yeah.
And I get that point, but you have to understand it at another level. I mean, what did Khabib lose with that? I mean, he would have gotten an incredible payday. You know, he would have gotten $500,000 payday. He would have gotten a shot at Conor or whoever he wanted. He would have had an instant title shot. So, in one regard, and we didn't get to talk about this a whole lot, but props to his trainers. I mean, his trainers walk in. So, I mean, put yourself in this guy's shoes. You know, here's this guy that you think is the best in the world. You know that if he wins, you're due $50,000. His stock is going to go. You're probably going to make $100,000 this year off this guy. And you're the one that has to say, hey, wait a second. You need to go to the hospital. I don't care about this fight. You know, you're in too bad a shape. There's not a lot of people that would make that call. Because it's already not been made by Khabib. He's already laying in the bed. He's not going to stop. You have to be the one that stops that. So, like, I know, you know, obviously in high school, wrestling mindset is where this weight cutting came from. But I really would like to know, who was the first UFC fighter that actually decided, hey, I'm going to start doing this over here? Because that person really is the one, if there's anything that's going to hurt this sport, I think it's going to be the weight cutting. Because like you said, that's all it does. It scrapped major fights. And I've never understood, and this is when we really need Anthony here, I've never understood what is the point, and he's only missed weight once, by the way, but what is the point of giving up 20% of your purse as a penalty to the other fighter? I mean, you look at all the times Hendricks came in overweight. I think one time Mayhem Miller, I think he was like 17 pounds over. Like, it was a joke. You know, like, did you even try? What is 20%? If I'm going to come in with that much of an advantage, because I'm just that heavier than you, what is 20% of my purse going to do? You know, is Khabib laying in that bed thinking, geez, you know, I'm going to have to lay here and keep sweating or whatever he was doing because I don't want to lose 20% of this purse. I mean, that's just, it's just that rationale, that punishment, I guess. And it's set by the athletic commission, so who knows why it's there. But that's something I've just never really understood. Because it doesn't seem to deter people from missing. But they have to find a better system of doing this. And like I said, no offense to them, they did try. These morning weigh-ins have made it better on the fighters from what we've been told. Is there a permanent solution? Probably not in the next 10 years, but something has to be done. I mean, like you said, that could be fighting other fights that have been lost for weight. It's not so much, you have to look at the problem. Is the problem the weight? No. The problem is how much they're trying to cut, and that's a health issue. And for every other sport to be so open about the health of their athlete, for this to continue to just kind of not even happen behind closed doors, because everyone knows, for it just to continue and not be resolved is insane.
Yeah, and as you said, there has to be some kind of system that is going to be put into place that, I don't know, either monitors, and I know I don't want the fighters to give up any more privacy than they already are, but you've got to do something to protect these guys from themselves. And I this brings me back again to a fighters union or an association would be beneficial not only to the fighters, but to the corporation or to the ownership or management themselves, because things like these would be able to get resolved. You'd all of this would be written into contracts or written into, how to do things in the sport. I just think it opens up a lot of opportunities for change to happen in this sport. But one thing before we move on, I wanted to touch on, because Vitor Belfort says he's got one more fight left in him, and unless the UFC wants to bring in or institute an old man's division, so to speak. And this is one of the talking points coming out of this fight week. I just think it's ludicrous. I mean, Bellator basically is already doing that. You know what I mean? So if you still want to fight, maybe there's a home for you over there. So I just don't agree with it. You know, we don't need even older guys coming in and then having special rules for them. Anyways, it's a clusterfuck, if you ask me, whatever Vitor's going on in Vitor's brain. So did you hear this comment at all, and do you have anything to say on it?
The Masters? Yeah, he wanted to have the Masters, right?
That's right.
You know, listen, I don't know any other sport that has age divisions. Listen, and I get where he's coming from. If I were him, I would probably be advocating the same thing. Because here I am in an alpha sport where I feel like I'm still capable of beating anyone on the planet. But then I get in there and realize that I can't quite cut it. And the reason I can't cut it is because I'm against somebody that's so much younger than me that they're just naturally more athletic, and there's nothing I can do to recapture that. And it leads to uncompetitive fights where someone generally just gets knocked out. If you go back to fighter safety, he's kind of got a point. On the flip side of that, it's also an open competition. And I think if you do that, if you start tomorrow, if you say, listen, anybody that's 34 and older and wants to go into this senior division, go ahead and have at it. I'm sure there are people that would go over, but probably not as many as we think. Because I bet a majority of fighters would still have that perception of, I am still better than anyone else out here. I will still win if I'm put in the ring against somebody younger than me, and that's all there is to it. So when I heard those comments, that's what I thought. Who else has he talked to that would be okay with this? Because I think to a lot of fighters, accepting that division would be also an admission of, hey, I'm not as good as I used to be. And if you're not as good as you used to be as a fan, I hate to sound cold-hearted, but you probably shouldn't be in there. And I probably don't want to watch you. I will, because I watched, you know, Ken Shamrock fight Royce Gracie. But I don't want to. I'll be there. I'll spectate it, but I'm not going to like it. And to me, the UFC doing that, I see zero chance. Because that all that is, truthfully, all that to me is a money grab to prolong a career to continue to make money. And if there's one thing the UFC, well, let me rephrase that. The old UFC would never have done that. The new UFC, right. I don't know. The old UFC would have never found a way for fighters to intentionally prolong their career through boring matches with other people of like age. The new UFC may rally behind this and think this is the greatest thing ever. And reach out to companies like Bengay and Viagra and adult diapers and say, listen, we've got the platform of all platforms for you here, guys. You need to get in on this. This is the seniors division of UFC, and by God, we're going to get some sponsorship dollars. And then they can get their own cage and everything.
Absolutely.
Metamucil could be right in there, you know.
You would have to open up the market to other.
You would.
That's for sure.
Totally new market of advertisers could just come right in. Could you imagine the increase in advertising dollars? I would just love to see the cage with the big Bengay in the middle, Metamucil, Viagra. You know, I don't even know who makes adult diapers now, but they could be over in the corner on the ring posts and stuff. Yeah, that'd be great. You know, AARP could get into this. You know, they would be all over it. Honestly, now, if this ever gets to them, they're going to jump right on this.
Okay, a couple quick things before we end the show, because surprisingly enough, we've eaten up the time. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, you know, just to go back to pick these other fights, if you didn't watch these prelim fights,
you really would do yourself
an injustice by not watching them. I mean, like we talked about earlier, this Costa guy, write his name down or create a Wikipedia page for him because he doesn't have one, because he looked impressive. And, you know, I get it. Garth McCollum is kind of like the jobber of the UFC. Like, they just put guys in front of him they expect him to get beat by. but the impressiveness of what happened there cannot be overshadowed. I mean, just a pure physical dominance in a minute and 17 seconds. The Jeremy Kennedy-Ronnie Jason fight, I was amazed that Ronnie Jason was allowed to wear a Jason mask coming out. I didn't know that Reebok made Jason masks, but apparently they do. I endear myself to fights where someone showboats and loses. In the third round of this fight, Ronnie Jason, which isn't his real name, by the way, put both his hands behind his back in a Connor-esque move, and then still goes on to lose with a unanimous decision in your home country. Like, how great? How great is that? Like, and I wish, you know how they put together, like, clips? I wish someone would put together clips not where someone showboats and gets knocked out, just where someone showboats and loses. And I know there's going to be a lot of Anderson Silva clips in there, but I would weed through them to get to the Ronnie Jasons of the world.
Okay, a couple of quick things that I want to mention. Big win by Kevin Lee, of course, with a comeback. You know, the win coming from a beautiful head kick, and then, you know, that was pretty much the end of the fight. Quickly, comment on this fight at all?
You know, I like Kevin Lee a lot, and I respect what he had to go through going over there, and I also like that after he won, he was very humble and wanted it, rather than say what he's done, which is put together, you know, a pretty good streak for himself in the UFC and probably deserves to be ranked a little higher. I personally thought it was a little bit back and forth in the first round, but, you know, who knows? As far as what he wants to do now, I like when fighters come out and say, this is what I want and this is where I want it to be. And he wants to go back to Detroit in front of his hometown crowd. And he knew that I'm sure he knew accepting a fight in Brazil, he would have that opportunity if he won. But he still had to go in and won. Trinaldo is no joke. I mean, he is, again, you talk about the age difference, you know, the seniors division possibly. But, you know, listen, he came off a win against Paul Felder. I didn't give him a shot in that fight. But maybe if they hadn't stopped it due to that, you know, 60-foot gash in Felder's head, it would have been different. But at the same point, you know, he put together some wins. I mean, Yancy Medeiros, Russ Pearson. I mean, he has some big names on his belt. It seemed like maybe he could have beat Kevin Lee. But Kevin Lee is just... You know, Kevin Lee's stock is rising too high. I'm going to keep saying stock now because of GSP. That's fantastic.
All right, let's touch on this one real quick because this was my fight of the night. Hanayaya versus Joe Soto. What a beast Joe Soto is. And I always like to point out, you know, when he's fighting that I'll take him because when he came back from in this fight, just bleeding all over the canvas after that headbutt, obviously – unintentional clash of heads, but a huge gash opens up in the first round, continues to persevere and gets the win. And like I always say, guys, you know, it was a great night of fights. If you just tune into the main card and the canvas is just covered in blood, which Soto was just absolutely dripping with blood, just like a faucet out of his head. Great fight, great perseverance. Again, the little guys, they always come through.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? That headbutt was not picked up by the female ref. I don't know how it wasn't, but I've never seen a headbutt. Had to throw the jab in. I've never seen a headbutt. I mean, literally just open someone up like a spigot. I mean, it cut him, and you were like, oh, well, there's a whole stream of blood. Oh, it's not stopping. Oh, there's blood everywhere. I mean, he couldn't get, at one point, I do believe that he tried to get an armbar in, and there was so much blood, he was like, well, can't do it, never mind, and just moved on. And Ronnie Yaya came in. You would have thought, if you just listened to this fight, if you didn't have video, and you listened to this fight, you would think Ronnie Yaya was the second coming of the greatest fighter ever. Because throughout the entire fight, while he was losing, they kept trying to tell me how great this guy is. Number one prospect. You know, and I'm like, he's good, but he's not winning. That's the only thing that really took me back about that fight was the constantly being, like, don't tell me who I need to like while they're losing.
Yeah, that was one
the other fight I do just want to... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
One that was one thing that I agree with you on this commentary team. I found Brian Stan really trying to lead, you know, us to a result of who we should be cheering for, what was happening in the Octagon that wasn't really happening. I mean, I did point that out in my head as well. I thought that was very strange. What were you going to say? Last fight?
I was going to say, you know, to close that point off, you know, they in the broadcast said that Josh Berkman retired. And then later on Twitter, Brian came out and said that he didn't retire, that he just had taken his gloves off in the Octagon, waved goodbye, and told the media that he wasn't finished, that we were led through the broadcast for, you know, the entire broadcast under the assumption that Josh Berkman retired. If you didn't go to Twitter, or you didn't have Twitter, or you didn't follow up with that, you would expect that you saw his last fight. Now, in my opinion, it with his performance, and I put this on Twitter, with his performance, Josh Berkman retired. I appreciate him. Right. I respect him as a fighter. He's accomplished a lot. But listen, I don't want to see people get hurt. And he was not prepared for that fight, for what was going to happen. But again, one of those situations where we're being told something that contradicts what's actually happening. And I, you know, Brian Stan, one of my favorite MMA personalities, you know, you could not find a better ambassador for the sport. But last night, I just felt like, as you said, he was kind of leading me into a line of thinking that maybe is what he saw, but was undeniably not impartial. And I just didn't see it a lot of the time. And he's now, to my recollection, he's never done that before. And if he did, it was never as blatant as it was last night. And I thought it was super interesting. I mean, we've sat here and three or four times we've jabbed at this female ref who I don't know. They never once acknowledged any of what she did wrong. I mean, in this fight, she literally stopped them in a submission for a doctor to come in to check a head cut, and then brought them back in standing. No. Yeah. And there was no protest.
They did point that out. They did point that out.
Did they point that out?
Stan say, yeah, I did hear him say that one thing about it. Yes. Why are they standing? Why are you?
But how do you get him back in a guillotine? You know, how do you get him back in a guillotine at that point? Like, listen, you know, all right, both of you lay on the ground. You get your head in. Up. Oh, it wasn't that deep of a guillotine. You're going to have to move a little bit to the right. Nope. Okay, there it is. Go. I mean, I've never seen a fight stopped. I've never seen a fight stopped in the middle of a submission. Of course it was going to be bleeding. He was getting choked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very strange turn of events, that's for sure. Okay, Ryan, I think that's going to do it for us for today. We did a good job. We can go home and sleep well. Very good job, just the two of us here, spilling an hour. So I'm going to run the music.
Well, I was going to say one quick thing.
Absolutely, go for it.
Yeah, but before we go, because I never have a song of the week, I do have a new Twitter follow for everyone. It's Steven Techie. Okay. He replaced Eric Winter as the head of UFC Fight Pass. And this was done earlier in the week.
Yep.
Great guy. Already had an opportunity to talk to him a few times. It's S_T, as in Thomas, E as in Edward, CCI. And hopefully he understands that he's got huge shoes to fill with Eric Winter, who's went on to SeatGeek and was probably one of the best things that happened to UFC Fight Pass. Let's hope that Fight Pass continues to grow in the face of the UFC, maybe not wanting it to prevail and everything.
Yeah, I think let's hope Fight Pass prevails because, again, I'm going to say it again, I think pay-per-view is dead, and we're really starting to see it this year with, you know, no stars being around, Connor not being around, blah, blah, blah. One thing I wanted to say real quickly while I still got you on the line, though, Ryan, is I had an opportunity to watch a lot of ACB yesterday afternoon, and I was very, very impressed with how quickly they got the fight started. When the next one ended, the next fight started. I know the UFC is really big on trying to sell sponsorships and commercials. But you know what, guys? If we can get these fight cards over and done with before 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern Standard Time, before we have a daylight saving time where we lose an hour, that would be greatly appreciated. Thoughts?
absolutely agree. I for the longest time not understood why every other sport caters itself to the Eastern Standard Time. We call it the Standard Time because it is the standard of time to be held, and the UFC is one of the ones that does not do that. Now, congratulations to them for not going the Bellator route and tape delaying stuff overseas, but at some point we just have to work with it a little bit more. I'm going to go to the Buffalo card, I'm going to go to the Kansas City card, I may go to the Tennessee card. It is ridiculous to walk out of arena at 2 in the morning, go back to a hotel at 3 o'clock, sleep till 11 o'clock, and then drive hours to get home. You know, compromise with me a little bit, and I'll be okay.
I hear you.
Started
hear
at
you.
5 o'clock.
Okay, so let's give you a little bit of love, because without you, I wouldn't have known that there was a CFL football game coming out. And so why don't you go ahead and tell the people about your YouTube, and then we'll get you out of here.
Oh, sure. And I think that game now is about 3 months from coming out. So if you have an Xbox One, if you don't go buy one, I suppose, that game is being produced by Canuck Play. You can go see footage of it, interviews of it on my YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/RyanMoody21 altogether. My first name, my last name, the numeric 21. And I've got a whole bunch of video game football videos, not just that one. But yes, that is a game that I'm proud to be involved with. Have exclusive content from them and wish them all the best.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Perfect timing. And like that,
hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.